Talking with our guy out in Vegas, Todd Furman, at Todd Furman. Todd, what would you have done? I'm curious. You're a guy who runs the numbers. I asked this on Twitter the other night. Is it better to have two wrongs? Does it make a right? Would you have said to the, if you were an official and you knew that you blew the foul call, and then you go back and you look at it, and they basically gave the ball to Oklahoma City and stuck with the call on the floor, or would you have given the ball to the Clippers?
I think you have to go with the letter of the law and realize that, you know, the bottom line was there was no foul called on the play. It clearly went off of Reggie Jackson's hand, and it should have gone over to the Clippers. But the nice part about the NBA, Clay, you can bet your bottom dollar that for Game 6 in L.A., the Clippers will get every single call, and we'll be right back in Oklahoma City for Game
7. That was our ball!
Yeah, they want that Game 7.
There was one time where he clearly went, that was our effing ball, which was great.
Well, I love when they do that, and then the guy's like, lip reading, he said that was our ball. take out the expletives.
I give Doc credit for speaking his mind rather than just playing the game and being quiet in the post-game press conference, because I would have been just as irate given how that end of the game went. But Chris Paul apparently doesn't take any of the responsibility or burden for turning the ball over twice in what should have been a walk-away win for the Clippers rather than a blown 7-point lead with 45
seconds. How much would that he did stand up and say it was his fault. Actually,
yeah,
the whole game.
He did. I like what Chris Vernon tweeted after. He's like, you know, in most cases, the owner would have the coaches back there, but in this case, I don't know.
How much would that have swung? They say like 80. The mayor said earlier, 81% of the winners of Game 5 go on and win the series. How much would that game have swung the series odds in Vegas?
Now, it would have changed things considerably. Right now, you're looking at the Thunder, a 1-4 favorite to win the series.
Which is for like 80%, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Basically does. It belays the math right there. So talking about putting up $4 to win a dollar coming back. Had the Clippers won that game and had a stranglehold, knowing that they're 4.5-point favorites for Game 6, you were looking at the Clips at about a $2 favorite to close them out. Actually, a little bit higher than that, I should say. Closer to that $2.53 range. So nearly a $7 adjustment and a drastic change in win probability based on the way that last minute of the game
went. So I'm trying to do the math in my head, which is always tough, but we're going from roughly like a 70 or 65% chance of the Clippers winning the series to an 80% chance of Oklahoma City winning the series based on that single situation there.
Exactly, about 65-70% to 80% the other way. So you're talking about a drastic change in fortunes for what the Clippers will be faced with now having to win each of the next two games.
We were talking about this earlier. Is it fair to say that the Heat and the Spurs are now prohibitive favorites to win the Eastern and Western Conference Finals, respectively?
Yeah, the Heat will be a little heavier favorite. What's going to be interesting about the Heat series now, as we've seen the resurgence, so to speak, of the Pacers up until Game 5, is what odds makers will elect to do in terms of opening that series price. Because Miami and Indiana, as far as power numbers are concerned, you're looking at that Game 1 being played in Indiana with Miami a pick'em, maybe even the Pacers opening a short favorite, which I think could be a mistake. So you're talking about Miami about $1.70 to $2 favorite, depending on where odds makers want to shade the price. San Antonio, though, right now, given the coaching mismatch, it'll be Greg Popovich against Scott Brooks. You're looking at the Spurs north of $2, and I truly believe that you should be talking about them at about a $2.50, even $3 favorite, given how dominant they've looked when they want to take their game to the next level.
Blaine was talking about this earlier. I'm curious if you agree. Are the Pacers the most difficult team for Vegas to project just because their range of outcome seems so incredibly large from game to game that it has to be almost impossible to set these lines?
It's become extremely difficult, but the bettors aren't having a ton of success figuring out the Pacers either. You look at what they've done at home. They're 4-14 against the spread the last 18 games, which is ridiculous for a team that's a one seed and should be so-called elite. You could have had the Pacers after they lost Game 1 to the Wizards at 10-1 to win the Eastern Conference. How much does that change when they went up 3-1? The Pacers moved to a 2-1 shot, so it really cut the odds in half, more so, I should say, in fifths. And you look at what their price is right now, they are also a 1-4 favorite to close out the Wizards at some point. But, of course, Washington a 4.5-point favorite for Game 6, and then the Pacers would open in that 4-4.5 range for Game 7 at home.
Todd Furman, our guy in Vegas, with point spread perspective here on 3HL every Wednesday at 4:30.
Well, we're talking about the Clippers. What about Donald Sterling odds on keeping the Clippers? I mean, is there any chance that happens?
Well, LeBron came out with some pretty strong comments that said he wouldn't be playing next year if Donald Sterling still owned the Clippers. I think LeBron may have an awful lot of free time for endorsements if that's the case. I just don't think that you're going to see Donald Sterling go down without a fight from a legal standpoint. Personally, I mean, you could take as much money as you want. I make Donald Sterling about a 1-2 favorite to still own the team when they tip off the 2014-2015 season.
So you don't think it'll be, well, what's the odds other than a lockout? Basically, that's what LeBron is threatening, that the team's
to lead a boycott.
They're gonna lock out.
Yeah, I think it'd be real interesting to see what had happened. I can't imagine the whole league would shut down if this was the case, because you're talking about the players forcing legal action, and this is going to open a whole other can of worms. And as Clay has eloquently alluded to a number of times, you may win the battle, but the players are not about to win the war in the grand scheme of things.
Well, on a prop bet, we were talking about Jake Locker and his health. And will he be a Titan next year? And if not, then who is the ringleader in the draft to be the next Titan quarterback? Yeah.
It all depends on the way the Titan season plays out. And judging by their futures, they could be drafting in that top three. You look at some of the mock drafts for the 2000.
I love how you just dropped that in there.
That's like a mushroom cloud.
It's like getting stabbed with a velvet knife.
You just gave me chills right there.
If there's one thing I've never been able to say,
the Titans are one of the three worst teams in football. And then you just slid it right in there.
As a part of a sentence.
Yeah, as part of a sentence.
Oh, man.
It's all about a delicate balance. But if the mock drafts are an indication, maybe Marcus Mariota is headed to Tennessee to be the heir apparent.
Oh, no.
I'm not sure he's the pro-style quarterback that anybody's looking for. Either way, though, I'm sure you could make a deal and get Ryan Fitzpatrick back there under center in Nashville sooner rather than later.
All right, well, Johnny Me start the first game in the NFL? That's Johnny Manziel, by the way.
I'm going to say that Johnny Manziel, if I'm setting an over-under on games he'll start for Cleveland this year, I'll make that number 4.5, but I do not think he starts the season opener. It will be interesting to watch and see how betting trends start to emerge once reps are announced, given how much time we think we'll be able to see him during the preseason.
All right, who wins Clips versus OKC in the next game?
I think the Clippers win Game 6, and
yes.
I don't think the game is anywhere close. I think we see Game 7 going back to Oklahoma City. Besides, the NBA needs a Game 7 on Sunday, and what better way to get it than by giving the Clippers a few calls when Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant go to the bench early in the first quarter.
Let me hit you with the NHL. Blackhawks-Rangers advance into the NHL Final Four last night. Montreal-Boston in a Game 7 tonight. Anaheim and L.A. What do you think about those two games first?
You've seen some money come in on Montreal, and hard to argue with the success the Canadiens have had in terms of keeping games close. Boston, no stranger to being here before, but did lose a Game 7 against Washington a few years back. I would make a stronger case for this game being low scoring. I think the first team to two goals will walk out of Game 7 with a win to match up with the Rangers. On the other side of the draw, Anaheim-L.A., the Kings, $1.40 favorite. You can arguably say they've been better each of the last two games, but Josh Gibson, the young American goaltender, has really been the X factor between the pipes. One thing to keep in mind when you watch this game, guys, 100-degree temperatures in L.A. throughout the day. It'll be interesting to see what that ice quality is like when these two teams face off later tonight.
Patrick Kane with a ridiculous backhanded shot last night. You still like the Blackhawks?
I think they're probably the class of the West. The only thing is Anaheim has matched up real well with them in the past. I think if L.A. beats Anaheim in this series, the Blackhawks get through. Anaheim-Chicago, we're talking about a 7-game series going the distance.
Thanks, Todd.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Todd Vermin.